September 6th meeting. We're off schedule because of vacations and so forth, so we're doing it on the 6th tonight. And that I see all the directors are present. The next item is adoption of consent items. Approval of the minutes for June 14th, approval of the minutes for the meeting on the 24th, approval of the minutes for the 12th of July, acceptance of the incident activity report, approval of monthly financial report, approval of monthly transmittal. Anybody wish to pull any of those?
I move we adopt the consent items 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
I second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ah, just a minute here. I almost skipped it again. Oral communications. It's a time when you can make a comment for anything that's not otherwise on the agenda. It's going to be a quick meeting tonight. Okay. Chief's report.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. It's nice that it's cooled down a bit. That fog feels good. Hopefully everyone's enjoying it. I have a few things for you tonight. On the Chief's report, you'll see that I'm starting the advertisement of our Pulse Point app, and it's now in service and up and running. This is something we've been trying to put together for years. We really could never get the City of Richmond and their dispatch center to commit to this level of technology. It was something we were able to do right away with our switch to Confire. It's a device that you can have on your Apple or Android platform phone, and it gives you the ability to get notifications of, in essence, everything our fire trucks are doing. Calls they're going to, what type of call.
Free, absolutely free.
And it gives you a great overview. When you hear a siren in your neighborhood, you can pull your phone out and say, oh, what's that? Where's 65 going? What's those type of things. So it also is set up in a fashion. It's also set up in a fashion, if you have subscribed to one of the functions, it will tell you if there's a call for cardiac arrest or CPR that's in a public area somewhere in your community, which increases the chance that we might get bystander CPR started, or you know, someone may grab a public access defibrillator and show up. So it's a great tool. We hope to grow it and use it for some other things as we get going, but it's something that I really want to bring to the community. Probably about 5 years ago, and it's taken much longer, but with the change in dispatch services, we were able to do this. And it was something that was included in, it came after the fact. We negotiated the deal for the dispatch with Contra Costa County, and then I brought it up, and they just rolled it into the pre-negotiated price. So the developer of Pulse Point was Richard Price. He's a retired fire chief from San Ramon Fire. He developed this shortly after he retired from the fire service, and it's spreading quite rapidly in the United States. So it's an impressive tool, and I would encourage everyone to log on. It's free. Check it out and see what you see.
Can we tell Linnea, or does she know?
Yeah, it seems like
about this, because she could do a little article in the Outlook, and we could tell people to.
We could get it to her that way. Yeah. It's also coming out in the Fire Club.
Great.
It's already in there.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Is this now being used throughout Contra Costa County?
Yeah, I think everybody's using it, but Richmond.
Yeah, everybody but Richmond.
Yeah, everybody but Richmond at this point. Yeah. So
it's what's the Fire Club?
A newsletter we mail to every house in Kensington.
Never
got it. Before you threw it out.
You tossed it.
It goes to every address.
It's really nice, like glossy, quarterly.
Yeah, really?
You're hurting Brenda's feelings if you're saying you just threw it away.
It's just listed there online.
And it quarterly?
Twice a year. Twice a year.
So as you guys have seen by on the news, as late as this morning, there's 23 substantial fires working in the state, 10,000 firefighters out and about. If you look at my write-up here, I'll try to just skim through here, but I always like to point out what the men and women of your fire department have the capability to do for our neighboring jurisdictions within the state. On July 9th, we sent an engine company to the Alamo Fire in San Luis Obispo. They returned on the 13th and then were back out on the road on July 18th to the Detweiler Fire in Mariposa County. At both of those assignments, the fire companies were put into areas for structure protection and structure preparation. Structure protection is pretty much self-explanatory. They pull up, they put their hose on the ground, and they wait for the fire to come close, and then they put it out when it gets close to the structure. Structure preparation is something, it's getting more and more use, and it's getting talked about more, where we're going in people's yards once there's been an evacuation and doing prep where vegetation management wasn't done, or they had firewood stacked under their deck, or they had lawn furniture that would burn, ignite easily, and they move all those things away. So we did quite a bit of work doing that. Very effective in the areas where the engine company was on both those assignments. There were no structures lost where they were. On July 19th, we sent two firefighter paramedics out, also to the Detweiler fire, to work as line paramedics. What they do is they take their basic advanced life support equipment, and they get assigned to either a strike team of engines or a division, and then they're there for any medical need for anyone that's a first responder on the fire. On this specific fire, they had a situation where a CAL FIRE crew had hiked quite a long ways into the backcountry and was injured, and they had to hike and treat and prepare the patient for loading into a long line off a helicopter. So it's always great experience to see the men and women get out there and really do what they're trained to do. On July 28th, we also sent another paramedic out as a line paramedic to the Orleans Complex Fire in Siskiyou County. Our captain, Travis Crumpacker, newly promoted Captain Crumpacker. He just returned on the 2nd, so he was there 21 days. He was there for quite a long period of time. On August 12th, we sent another paramedic out to the Empire Fire in Mariposa County. And they returned on, on August 23rd. Since that time, we've sent two more line paramedics out to the Salmon Fire in Siskiyou County. These paramedics are still assigned to the incident and are out. Also since that time, on 8/31, we sent OES 300 out to the Galena Fire. They've been there 8 days now, and we're tonight at midnight we'll switch crews and rotate four people out and four people in for fresh personnel on the engine. Also on September 3rd, Chief Piconi went out to the Orleans Fire as a strike team leader. The state's really short on strike team leaders. I'm sure you've heard me talk about this in the past. It's when a battalion chief that's certified in the ability to manage resources goes out, and in this case he's managing a federal resources. So he has five federal fire department engines with him, and he's working up there. He's in a very remote area. I haven't heard from him in 3 days. So yeah, there's not any communication. I got a text message that said he would be dark for a while, so not to worry. So we've been really, really busy. We were really, really busy today getting people ready to rotate. They're on the road now, and they're headed that way. A couple things that aren't on here that I wanted to mention is I'm really happy. I walked by next door here. I saw a great turnout. This is a communication meeting for CERT and CARO and ECHO and the family service radio part of it. We have 30 people in there. Chief James texted me and said we had a great turnout. We have 30 people in there. So that's in conjunction with the Berkeley CERT program and some of the things they've done. And we're trying to look to leverage on some things that have been functional to help communication in the CERT area program. So we're really happy about that. And then one other thing I'll give you a little teaser on is myself and Brenda, mostly Brenda. We've been working with CAL FIRE to put together, we've heard a lot over the last couple of years about evacuation in Kensington. Specifically, people would like us to map out how do I leave Kensington when there's a disaster. And County Council and City Council, they always caution us on being very specific, and because you don't know where the incident is. And
yeah, sure.
If you train someone specifically how to evacuate from their neighborhood, then if the incident's there, they go to where the problem is. So we're working in conjunction with CAL FIRE, Diablo Fire Safe Council. We have some draft stuff. I really wasn't ready to present it, but we'll be putting a flyer together to kind of mirror our Ready, Set, Go document that we did a couple years ago that also will get mailed out to everyone. It'll be a checklist of how to be prepared, things to do. It'll have a map of the community that highlights main arteries through the community. It'll talk about practicing evacuating from your home, know your neighborhood, know routes of travel, and those type of things. So that's something that's coming up in the near future. What else do I have for you? September 16th and 17th. This is a El Cerrito specific thing, but we all live close together and we're really one big giant neighborhood. Is the 100-year anniversary for the city of El Cerrito. So on the 16th, there'll be a big parade that goes down through town and then ends up at the Cerrito Vista Park. And I'd invite anyone that would like to come down and check out the parade. And if you'd like to go to, they're calling it a gala dinner at Berkeley Country Club on the 17th. It's a big dinner open, and they're putting on a big spread for the public to celebrate 100 years of time.
That's great. I thought you were older.
Yeah. No, I feel 100, but I brought this for the board members. And in a few more years, we'll do this for Kensington. But these are our commemorative patches for the city of El Cerrito.
Oh, I saw those.
For 100 years.
I saw that. Chaparra had one of these, yeah.
And
these are cool. Thank you.
Yeah. When we get to 28, we'll do it for Kensington too. I don't know if we will, but we'll encourage someone to.
You're not going
to
be around 28 years.
So where are you putting yours, Larry?
So that's what I have tonight, and I thank you for your time. I would really encourage anyone that has interest in the response of what our engine companies do to really download the Pulse Point app.
Yeah,
it's nice.
I'm going to do that.
You can even, on the bottom, there's a lot of people don't like this because it's annoying. You can put on so you can hear the radio traffic, and you can hear all kinds of things.
Oh, great.
I think it'll be driving your spouse crazy.
Yeah.
Now, could I ask you an unrelated question to anything you talked about? Did we have, or did our paramedics report any problems with residents as a result of heat? And is there anything we can do to help people with heat? Because we have a lot of frail elderly, and I wonder how they fared.
In the past, in the fire plug, we've run articles on heat exhaustion and heat stroke and hydration and those type of things. We didn't really have a big spike in calls during that time period. We did receive some calls from folks concerned about they didn't have air conditioning and where could they go and what could they do.
Was there a
cooling station? I always recommend this to everyone in West County, and people always look at me like I never thought of that. The Hilltop Mall is a fabulous place to go on a hot day because there obviously is no one shopping there. It's completely abandoned inside, but the AC's on high. And so it's a great place to go exercise and walk and be in 78 degrees.
Listen,
so.
I go to the movies.
Yeah.
You know, and the difficulty with going to the movies is so hot that the soda machines were out.
I've told folks that for years, and as it gets closer and closer, I know Hilltop Mall's going to end up going away. So it's a great asset for a hot day.
In the meantime.
And they just changed the name to Shops at Hilltop.
Yeah.
A little more she.
Yeah.
Now that El Cerrito is 100 years old and hopefully wise, will we get a discount on our contract?
That's a good one, Carl.
Chief, on the evacuation, is there any coordination going on with the police district?
Yes, there will. We're just trying to get a draft document so we can get a foundation to go, and then we'll work with Chief Hall and see what we can do to make sure we're all on the same page.
On sending people out to the fire, how do you choose the paramedics? How do you select them?
It's based on a rotation, based on who's went the most recent. It rotates through, and you don't. It's not mandated. You don't get mandated to go. You can pass, and then it moves down the list through the department. And like any field or any career, there's people that are. I mean, Chris Renshaw is out for his third time. Captain Renshaw, he was our fire prevention officer a year ago.
Yeah.
He's out for his third time right now. He did 21 days, 14 days, and now he's at 7. So yeah, he's on a long run.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Talking about the evacuation, are you also talking to the cemetery? I mean, the ones that can't talk down there. In terms of opening that gate, because really for a lot of us...
Yeah, if we ever had a situation where we were going to use that for a route, we would just open the gate. Mm-hmm. That's in an emergency, fire police will just open gates and make things happen so we can get through areas.
What if the fire and police can't get there? Is there any way that they would consider, putting some kind of lock on it that can...
Well, we haven't breached that with them, so it's something we could consider, but most people don't unlock their property when they evacuate.
Well, there's nothing to steal in the cemetery.
That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Any more questions? We're okay.
I
have one other question.
Okay.
For information. You have two categories. One, good intent calls. I assume those are people who call and...
They call and we get there and they decide that they don't need us, or they call and then call back and say, we don't need you to come. Are they call and the ambulance is already there and cancels us, those type of things where we don't make content?
So what is the wrong company calls?
Say that again.
The wrong company. The wrong company. No,
the false call.
False. Yeah, this is wrong company. False calls.
False. No.
Oh, wrong location.
Wrong company. Wrong unit dispatch.
Wrong company. Yeah, so those are false calls.
But what's false wrong? She's saying, what's the wrong company?
What does it mean?
That's a generic code. I'm not even sure. That's what's in the federal guidelines. Those titles are in there. Those are our false calls.
Did you hear?
Yeah, I did. So basically, those two categories are the same?
False calls are false alarms, like a fire alarm where nothing was found.
So the explanation here in the agenda packet describes them as wrong company or unit dispatch. Does that make sense?
Let me get to it and see what you're looking at.
Yeah, it's like if there's a fire in Point Richmond or and by mistake the dispatcher sends us and then realizes, oh, I didn't want to do that, so they cancel us, send the correct
that is one of the types that can fire fall unit. It also can be false calls where someone calls in and says, I think I have a situation, I think there's smoke behind my house, and that also can fall in the category of false call, not just wrong company, unit dispatched.
Okay, moving on.
Thank you for the question.
President's report. I have some things to say, but they're going to come in regards to the public safety building. On the new business, number 11, resolution 1706, adopting the final combined budget for revenue, operating expenditures, capital improvement expenditures for fiscal year 17-18. Do you have some comments on that, or is that just?
I'll take people through. It's in the new business tab of the agenda, and we go through our budget many times during the year. We adopt it for the first time in June, after it's been presented and approved at a meeting in May or very early June by the Finance Committee. Under state law, we're required to formally and finally adopt it in September, which is what we're here to do tonight. In February, we have a mid-year budget review where we see how close we came to the projections in our budget. So this is one of about five times where we talk about our annual budget. So I'm going to kind of hit the highlights here, but not address each line item. But if you have any questions about the line items, sing out. If you look at our revenue, expense, and capital budget, this is the sheet I'm going to be referencing as we go through the budget. And if you look at our revenue budget for fiscal year 2017-18, you'll see we're projecting total revenue of $4.2 million. And then over here, if you look at the second page, you'll see our total operating expenses are $3.3 million. And then because of the money we're budgeting for preliminary work on the public safety building, our total expenditures are $4.1 million, so we're going to have a surplus in the neighborhood of $150,000 next year as a result of our operations this fiscal year. If you drop down then to the bottom of page 2, that shows that at the end of the fiscal year, we will have unallocated cash of about $650,000. That's because we have designated funds, and the designated funds are described in the next two pages, where every year we put 1/15th of the anticipated present cost of each of our two engines aside, because our engines last for 15 years, and then when their useful life is over, we have the money set aside already. It's like our version of a Christmas plan, you know, where you put the money aside and then you've got it set aside. So we're putting $117,000 aside this year for replacement of each of our two engines.
and you'll see that the replacement of one is quite imminent. On the next page, you'll see that our Type 3 vehicle is being replaced not this year, but next year, fiscal year 18-19. So we'll zero out that amount in another year when we replace our Type 3 engine. In addition, next year we're contributing $180,000 to our public safety building, and that's because we went back to see how much it costs to operate our public safety building, and we try to contribute at least the amount it costs to operate. So at the end of fiscal year 17-18, we will have approximately $2 million in accumulated reserves to spend on the new public safety building or the renovation of the existing public safety building. We also have, if you look here under cumulative designated funds, you'll see that we have prepaid the retiree trust. And that indicates that we have money with CalPERS that we contributed, and we're hoping when we get the next actuarial study, which is imminent, I think, we're hoping it will show that we have fully funded our obligation to our retirees. So that's the amount we contributed to fully fund $953,000 there. Now, I'd like to go back and look at a little bit of the detail. Now that you've kind of seen the overall picture, I'd like to look at a little bit of the detail. And I'd like to focus in particular on the operating expense. And you'll see, for example, here under water system improvements, under outside professional services, we're budgeting $20,000 for water system improvements. We budget that every year, and what that does is allow our fire chief at his discretion to slot in a hydrant when East Bay Mud has the streets open. If he believes it's appropriate and will add to the fire safety of the community, he then has the funds available immediately to put in a hydrant at essentially budget prices, because we're not paying to open up and close the street. And then if he puts in those two, he would come back to us and say, can we put in our $20,000 contingency fund again, so that he always has that discretion, because we never quite know. The East Bay Mud doesn't have a regular replacement schedule on pipes. They basically replace when they break. So we like to give Lance that discretion. So that explains that $20,000 that people often question. If you look right down underneath that, you'll see with respect to our obligation to our retirees, we've budgeted zero on the assumption that the actuary will in fact tell us that we have fully funded the obligation to our retirees, so that we will be able to pay those expenses from the funds already set aside with CalPERS. Then a lot of people don't know about all of our community service activities, so I'm just going to highlight a couple of them. The community pharmaceutical drop-off, we pay for residents to drop off expired or unneeded drugs twice a year, and that's for the disposal of those drugs. The CERT program here, we're budgeting at $17,500. A lot of that is towards sheds and preparedness. We're putting fully stocked sheds in each of the CERT neighborhoods, and then an additional one here near the community center. So that's for the primarily for the purchase and stocking of those emergency preparedness sheds. Then if you drop down, you'll see we're budgeting $2,750 for the community shredder. Twice a year, we have a shredding event down here in the parking lot, where we bring out a commercial shredder, and for about 4 hours people can drop off their material, confidential material, and we'll shred it right before your very eyes, so you don't worry about confidentiality or identity theft. That's what that is. Underneath that is the Diablo Fire Safe matching grants. When we have residents of Kensington who contribute money to the Diablo Fire Safety Council, we have agreed to match those donations up to $8,000 in large measure because we believe in what Diablo Fire Safe does, but also because they make significant grants back to our community, and we would like to support them and recognize that. one thing we're doing with Diablo Fire Safe is the juniper reduction throughout the community. So we're helping residents pay for removal of juniper throughout the community, which should make the whole community more fire safe, not just the neighbor who's removing the offending junipers. And then you'll see right underneath that, that there are fire safe planting grants where we help fund replacement planting, fire safe planting, to replace the junipers. Right below that is the demonstration garden for $30,000, and we're finally getting some traction on that with the Community Services District. We have what we hope is a nearly final memorandum of understanding between the two districts, and we're targeting spring for planting the demonstration garden. So that's coming close to happening, and we're really thrilled about that and very happy with the cooperation we're getting from the Community Services District on that. So those are a number of community service activities that a lot of people are unaware of. Also, we've got the community sandbags, where during the wet season, we have sandbags right down here in the parking lot, and we make those available to the public so that they can divert water from their homes. Now, if we go
not,
on
not
to
just
the,
for the wet season, Janice, also for whenever we have a water main break.
Well, that's right.
There's
water main
lots
break.
Of, lots
yeah,
of people
right.
need those sandbags in a real hurry.
Yeah, you're right.
Janice, can I ask you a quick question about just while we're right there?
Okay, hang on one sec. Let me go back.
The Diablo Fire Safe?
Yes.
Is there any chance that they would, is there any option to get money from them for a demonstration garden?
I don't believe they've donated to help the Oakland people with the demonstration garden. I think they're much more fire prevention rather than the educational component.
Okay.
We can certainly ask, but
well,
I'm not aware that they got
like
the money.
It just ties into what the other
yeah.
things that they...
No, it is part of their whole thesis, but I don't believe they helped Oakland, and that makes it hard for them to help us, but I'll find out.
I go to those meetings, and all of the grants that we issue at those meetings are fuel reduction. And
have they ever considered it, though? I mean, things change. Is it worth asking? Is something we could be first?
Yeah. I guess the answer is I don't think anybody's ever applied. And if somebody, I've always been under the impression that this, and the grants, the Diablo Fire Safe Council is basically a money funnel. They get large grants from FEMA, and I hope that keeps up, but who knows. But they get large grants from FEMA in the six-digit type grants, and then they parcel them out in $5,000 pieces to one or more, typically five households, for fuel reduction.
But I think it would encourage people, if they could see all the things that they could plant, I think it would encourage them to get rid of the juniper and to make those changes. It would be a nice segue into, I don't know, it just seems connected. And whether, I understand, they may say, no, we're not going that far.
I'll be glad to suggest it at the next meeting, which is, yeah, I can ask them. I mean, like you say, the worst that can happen is they say, oh, no, we don't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can't tell you years ago, Diablo Fire Safe, this probably was, 2006, 7. They did come up with a grant, but it wasn't through FEMA. It might have been through the state, through CAL FIRE, or one of the other granting authorities, and they really pushed the Red Flag Awareness Program. And that grant alone put together a website, a flyer, and the Red Flag Program itself, and every station in the county got a flag based on that grant. So
maybe.
Something to think about.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to ask. Okay, and then the last thing I'd like to highlight here is our proposal to spend up to $750,000 this year on the public safety building. And Don, I think, will talk about more about that when we get to the next couple of items on the agenda, you know, which are basically the trenching to find out what the earthquake situation is, where the fault is. But I would like to ask, if we're happy with the architect we chose, because we're $180,000 in, and we have plans that are of very little use to us since they're 20% more than what we told them our absolute maximum was. So are we happy with the work these people are doing?
The market is crazy. And so yeah. We started out with the first estimate about $650 a square foot for building and site.
Uh-huh.
And then that was, maybe 10 months ago. And then uh-huh. I think in January it updated and it went to like $750. And I might be off. You guys can correct me if...
No, you sound close.
And then in June, total surprise, the price per square foot went to about $950 a square foot. So you can't blame that on the architect, it's the market.
Okay.
And so, but what we're doing is reducing, you know, we've gone through and reduced the program, and I think we're still doing okay, but you can only go so far.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's be harder and harder to keep reducing it, but the market is crazy, and you just can't get contractors. They're all booked. If you look around and see all that, I mean, whoever's going to do the station is not going to do a high rise, but if uh-huh. you just look at all the buildings that are going up and all the housing, I mean, you drive uh-huh. along San Pablo and it seems like every few months there's a new building going up.
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's one of those times where I know there's been times when escalation has been 1.5% a month, you know.
Wow.
Better part of 20% a year. So that's what we're in. I've asked the Mac 5 if they see that this is leveling off, and they say no, they don't see it. And mm-hmm. with these giant projects, you know, they run on for years and years and years. If you're mm-hmm. doing a high rise, you know, it's 3 years or whatever
yeah.
it takes to build them. So
yeah.
you know, they'll still have a lot of work even when the economy starts to cool. So that's one. We have lots of challenges on the project, but the money is certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We and the estimate is being done by Mac 5, and we had a discussion with the architect. This is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it jump like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that's kind of the way the world is right now. And Lance did some work on finding out what stations are going for a square
mm-hmm.
foot, and you got one at $1,300 a square foot or something.
Yeah, I don't know if I have that document tonight,
yeah.
but it's everybody I've talked to on these projects.
It's in the minutes of the June 24th meeting. Yeah.
It's running away from everybody, in essence. We
yeah.
just had a project in El Cerrito, some improvement to the Loney Greenway, where we put it out to bid and it came in really high, so they pulled it back and did a bunch of value engineering, which really is making cuts that you don't want to make, and put it back out. It came in more than the original bid.
Jesus.
They know they got you.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
That's always been a factor.
So you're happy with the people that we've retained?
We're happy with the
project.
Architects. Yeah,
okay.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, they've given us good service. You didn't attend that meeting, but I
okay.
thought Mallory did a really good job at presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Can I ask
okay.
a question? I know, John, you mentioned about bringing back the size and maybe taking a couple things out of the design that may not be necessary. Have you reached that point yet?
Yeah, we had a session maybe 3 weeks ago, and so I think we probably took 15% of the area out. That's kind of my guess. I think Lance is probably, we'd hope to get closer to 2, which would have then kind of, we would have taken 20% out, about. So, so we've done that. And then I think we'll go back to Mac 5 and say, okay, what's the market doing right now? What does it look like if we got this thing out to bid in a year? And so far they haven't seen it, but as I explained before, they haven't seen a lot of relief coming.
How much of a redesign would that require of your architect?
We gave up on the third apparatus bay, so that helps that whole ground floor and solve the parking problem. So there's, but at this point, they can turn those plans around pretty quickly. And we've stayed away from architecture. I mean, there's some massing models, but we just have tried to stay with plan, you know, programmatic plans.
Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Any more questions on the budget?
Okay.
Seeing none, I would propose the adoption of Resolution 1706,
adopting the final combined budget for revenue, operating expenditures, and capital improvements for fiscal year 2017-2018.
I'll second.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Well, I second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The measure is approved. The let's see. The next three proposals are all related to the geotech work, and should make probably a little pre-note. We're going to do a trench, which basically you're cutting across what are called fault traces. You know, they're not the main fault, but it's these branches. And so you dig a trench about 10 feet down, and then the geotech guy goes through and tries to find these fissures. And what's happened at these fissures is, you know, the ground has slid by one another, so they don't match up. So that's what they'll be looking for. And they might find an active, like they could find an active fault trace, they could find one that's what they would call ancient inactive, and I don't know quite how they decide that, but if it's ancient and inactive, then it doesn't count. If we find one, then we can't do a new building on that site, flat out. And I don't know about renovation on it. I do know that we were doing some fire station for the city of Oakland quite a long time ago, and they found a station that had an earthquake under it, and they just closed it down, just bangle, they just moved out. So I don't know about, I think the geotech would probably make a recommendation on whether we should do that or not. It seems a little risky, so I don't have a, you know, I don't know. The history leading up to this is that we'd had four previous geotech reports at different kinds of, back to 69 when the building was built, and then it's additions that we've done, the improvements. The last one was 2009, I think. Yeah, 2009, Kleinfelder. And I can't put my finger on it, but it's in here that they came back and said there are no fault traces east of the Arlington, so we'll see.
They didn't do trenching, though.
No, well, they evidently in 69 they did some trenching, but it sounded like it was not up to the quality we do now. It might have been intermediate or something. I don't know. They didn't go deep enough. I don't know. But this engineer is new. Kleinfelder didn't have time to do it, and this is another good engineer. But they said it's been so long since the initial study that they need to go ahead and see what's there. So that's what we're doing.
And they recommend trenching from the island.
They recommend trenching. Yeah. I mean, we're sort of in the middle of it, so.
Look at the USG.
Well, yeah, and I think the mapping changes, and evidently there's several different maps, so, you know, it's kind of a guessing game, but we'll find out. And so we're going to execute these things tonight, and we should have some idea by the end of the month. Is that about right?
You know, the city of El Cerrito had a walk last month that I took, and then they had another one in June, and they bring in a geologists from the U.S. Geological
Survey,
you know, whatever their name is or whatever. But he took about 30 of us on a walk from Arlington Park up through along the Arlington until you got to the country club, and then through the golf course to the clubhouse. And the fault runs right through the golf course, and you can also see it's right behind the clubhouse at Arlington Park. You can see where it is too, and he showed us where they did the trenching on the golf course, and they do these 10-foot deep trenches see, and he showed us what they're looking for to tell what's active.
They had a photograph of the falls.
Yeah, of what was going on there. So it's a great walk. You know, it's not a demanding walk, and it takes like an hour and a half or 2 hours. It's extraordinarily educational. The guy's very good.
Could you see where there had been slippage then?
No, you know, I expected to see like big ruptures, and you know, but it was real interesting. You could see why the fault, you know, like further down, it runs right down the middle of the Arlington, because the fault tends to be in this little valley, which is where people like to build roads. when they didn't realize that they were building right on top of a fault. So, I mean, there's actually a reason why it runs right down the Arlington, because it's a natural place where the road builders go, oh, look, let's go there.
Yeah.
You know, and so you can see it really easily at the golf course where they haven't re-landscaped the portions of the golf course. And you can see where it is just about, it's maybe 25, 30 yards back from the curb of the Arlington.
And I think we're just 100 meters from the fault down the hill.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a really interesting walk. So watch for it, and you learn a tremendous amount. But, you know, I was focusing on how deep they trench and everything when they do it all. And they aim for 10 feet. Yeah. And they figure 10 feet tells the whole story.
So I'm wondering whether you hit hard.
Oh, whether you can even go 10 feet?
Well, because we're in such a big cut, you know, it's cut in, so I don't know.
I don't know.
The full description of that, what you just described, I think it's on UC Berkeley web. It describes the whole process of what they trenched and so forth and the results.
Yeah,
I mean, I have gone on looking at sites with Geotech, and it's always, you know, they start to talk about the rock and this and that and the fissure here and this and that, so it's all pretty interesting.
Well, I didn't see any, that's what I thought, but there were no fissures, you know. They just said, oh, well, look, there's, you know, the inflection point, and there it is.
Well, I'm thinking that if the engineer comes upon something, he'll let us know and we can go look.
And then we can go look down.
We can go look,
Well, let us know, and we'll all take a look. Okay. See, I think it's what you don't want to see is like this white powdery stuff. That's what they don't want in the hole.
Okay.
I gather.
All right.
Yeah.
Lance, our guys are certified in trench rescue, right? So
yes, we have members.
In case we happen to be down there when it lets loose.
The board is falling down.
You have a question?
I wondered whether you've ever consulted Walter Alvarez.
No.
Do you know Walter?
I'm not sure.
Walter lives on San Luis over the border, retired professor of geology at Berkeley, taught for about 30 years of class called Mapping the Berkeley Hills. He and his crews have been everywhere. And
I think his name has come up now that you mentioned it. Yeah.
Well, you usually find him in Kensington in the morning.
Okay.
Actually camps there.
He's the brother of Louis Alvarez.
No, that's his father.
Huh?
His father is Louis.
Oh, okay.
Andrew's his brother. But anyway, there's also another guy that you, I think, alluded to, or Dave did, that they did a guide to geology and hazards of Berkeley campus. That's online there. It's really interesting, especially the football stadium. I would highly suggest getting hold of Walter. I can give you his address if you want. His email is platetech@berkeley.edu.
Plate, like a
site,
at
berkeley.edu. And Walter, I'm sure, would be glad, if he can't do it because he's traveling, to put you in touch with people who actually have taught classes, know this. And besides having engineers there, having people who are actually geophysicists.
Yeah, I mean, we are hiring someone that we think is competent, so we wouldn't want them to feel like they're getting directed, but it would be...
local neighbors, and it is directions, expertise, and it's always good to have it, because these people have a stake.
Okay,
and
all right.
They actually have met this stuff.
Well, he might be interested in, you know, we don't trench very often in Kensington, so...
Yeah, but, you know, if you trench here... something you've seen like 2 miles down the road is not the same, because it's the same off.
It's the same. Yeah.
It's really complex geology, but it's next time.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to go through the proposals. We have the proposal from Rock Ridge Geotech, and they're basically the geotech engineers on the job. And they will be doing the field work and writing the report. Their fee is $22,000.
Yes.
I'm just going to do all three now. And then Lombardo Diamond Core Drilling is going...
Do we need to vote on them one at a time, though? They're different agenda items.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if he explains... Yeah. What the
I'm just going to explain them all, and then we'll just... Yeah. Let's see. Now, I'm not... they are going to do the trench... They're going to do the... I think... Are they doing the removal of the asphalt and the trenching? Or did we have...
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay, And so they're going to do the trenching, and then we have a proposal for recompaction, open pipe, new asphalt. Are we still missing the one to do the saw cutting, or are they there?
No, Lamar is doing it.
Oh, they're doing, okay, they're doing that.
Lamar is doing the saw cut for 100 feet, 2.6 wide, 4 inches deep. The first contract was doing the trench itself.
Yeah, and that's basically $3,200, so it's $25,000 more or less altogether. And the geotech was recommended by Mac5, and I think they talked to two or three different geotechs and thought this would work out fine. So what we would need, any other questions on the scope?
So the whole package is about $27,000, and do we know when this would be done and how long it would take?
Brenda?
We're planning on the third or fourth week of September. It's going to take about a week.
Okay.
And the back parking lot will be off limits to everybody.
And the opening and closing and everything is within? I sound like a cemetery, but it's, yeah.
Are they going to have to open the road as well?
No.
No, we're going back a sidewalk up to the retaining wall, I think. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, taking number 12, the Rock Ridge proposal.
I propose we accept the Rock Ridge Geotech proposal in the amount of $22,000 described in the packet. Okay.
I second it.
Okay, got it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Measure passes. Proposal is accepted. Proposal from Lombardo Diamond Core Drilling is $1,461.
I propose that we engage Lombardo Diamond Core Drilling Company at a cost not to exceed $1,461 for trench cutting and removal as described in their proposal in our packet.
I second.
Okay. All those in favor of the measure?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Aye. Proposal is approved. Proposal from Shira Branren, paving, recompact. $3,198.
I propose we retain Chavarin Paving to recompact the open trench and pour new asphalt at a fee not to exceed $3,198 as described in the proposal in our packet.
Okay. A second. You guys are getting worn out from this.
Oh, I'll second.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The measure, the proposal is accepted. Good.
May I have a question whether competing bids were sought for any of these or all of them?
Say that again?
Competing bids?
We didn't do that. Professional services, it's not a requirement. We can pick on qualifications.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would just add we had a hard time getting these bids.
Really?
People are missing.
Yeah.
We wanted to go back to clientele and we did the 2009 report and they told us they were too busy to do the project.
So
I think Paul took him a week or two to find all the
ransom for the trench cutting.
Right.
Rebuild also said they
were
unavailable.
Is there a monetary point at which you have to get competing bids? Like it was going on?
Well, I think that typically we interviewed two architects and we picked one.
Yeah.
So that was not fee-based, it was qualifications.
No, sure, but is there a requirement?
There is a requirement that publicly funded construction has to be bid, publicly bid. So that we would do, but let me put it this way. If you do work in the Valley, fee runs is a big deal. In the Bay Area and metropolitan areas, it basically is qualifications, and then you negotiate, and if you can't make a deal, then you can go on to the next firm on the list. So that's pretty standard. Okay. All right, so board reports, finance, Janice, I think you...
We've done it already.
You've done it,
evening,
yeah. So public safety building, I've explained the geotext part of it, and I think I explained that we didn't think we had a fault trace there, but we'll find out. In the packet... we got a request from KPOA to answer a series of questions that I think came out of the 24th meeting. And so they were reasonable questions, and if you have a packet, you can see them. It's KPOA questions 7417. And I'm not going to go through in detail, but they had some questions on the rationale, the deficiency of the existing building, which we thought we had explained at that meeting, but we evidently didn't do a very good job at that. New facility, better option than retrofitting and remodeling, so there's a statement about that. There are comparisons, question on comparison of construction costs, which we talked about a little bit before, and then some programmatic sort of things about are the spaces we're providing more or less standard? And the answer is that some of it's standard and some of it is squeezed a little bit, just trying to get things down. Square footage in relationship to El Cerrito wasn't a question that necessarily fit. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, we didn't have a good example.
Well, we had totals for what we have now and totals for what our needs assessment, but we didn't have room by room breakdown.
Coordination with CSD. Rochelle has attended some of the meetings we've had. We've kept her up to date. We have said as a sort of a way we want to do things that we'd like them to be part of the project. I mean, that's easier said than done, and they would like to be part of it because if we tear this building down, they have to go someplace. So, I mean, they might as well stick together if we can figure out how to make that work. Financial, let's see, I'm just sort of doing this here, just touching on it. Well, we're further behind where they would like us to be on financing because the project has been so hard to define. We had looked at the park site. We dropped that a while ago for the new building. There are problems with putting the new building on that site. There might be more problems with it. So are they going to outsource police or not? So there's been a whole lot of things that have left us not exactly having a defined project that we say this is it. So that should get cleared up pretty much this month, I would think. I know that CSD was going to start looking at outsourcing as an option.
Excuse me, Doc.
Yes.
That stuff is going to be cleared up this month by who?
Well, we will have an idea what the geotech report says, and that will...
No, I understand that, but vis-a-vis what the district, the KPPCSD district...
Well, we have been, in a sense, waiting for them to decide where they are, whether they are going to outsource or not, and whether they would want to fit in with this or not. So so we've kind of waited on them a little bit. So we haven't wanted to force them because, you know, the board is pretty much new and it's taken them a while to get up to speed. I think they're doing it, like, far as I can tell, I think they're doing a great job. So they'll be at some point saying, we're not going to outsource or we're going to try to outsource. Here's our limitations. And I think we're going to have to help on the financing, you know, because they...
Did I hear you say that they were going to make that decision this month?
What Rochelle had planned to do, and I don't know where they are in the process, but in say 2 or 3 months ago, they thought they would be taking on some of these issues. I don't know that they'll finish finally, but we might have some kind of direction. So we don't want to wait forever. We're now in a building that's been deemed unsafe. So, but at the same time, we're trying to give them enough time so they can decide. And I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, it's.
There has been no public announcement of any of that at the district meeting. So unless.
Well, I would expect you'll.
Backroom deal that public.
Well, I think. Meeting. Well, no. I mean, we can't do that. But I think that they have been. I think fairly. I think it's known that they're going to take up the issue of outsourcing. Is that right?
No.
Well, it hasn't been agendized yet.
They are looking at considering it. You've heard that.
they're looking at considering.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so let's put it that way. I mean, you know as much as I do. I just know that along the way, they're going to have to make some commitments or not. So we know whether to proceed with them or not.
Well,
so
I was just curious where that month, you know, in 1 month came from.
Well, it was, right now we got the geotech stuff, we'll get straightened around. I understand they're trying to take up the outsourcing, and I'm sure it'll take months to finally, you know, come upon a conclusion of which way they go, but at least we'll have some idea, I think.
If you get the go from geotech, what's your schedule?
We don't have a schedule because this is what we're saying. One of the sort of things that's challenging is that we don't know exactly what the project is, and we won't know that until CSD decides where they are.
So you don't have an ideal schedule in your own mind.
Well, we had a schedule, but we're behind.
If you had an ideal world, let me ask you that.
Well, I think that, let's just say all the decisions were made. Let's just take a schedule float that is floating, okay? That the construction documents, probably the planning process, we could get done in about a year. Mm-hmm. So that would mean that we would hire, the architects have been working on some contracts that would define scope, but we would then do a contract to do all the construction drawings and construction administration. So we haven't done that yet. But let's just say we did that. I think about a year, plus or minus, we could go out to bid. Then you have about 30 to 60 days, or you have probably say 60 days of bidding. 30 days to bid, and there's time to get the thing noticed in the paper, you know, and it has to then, the contract has to be approved by the board. So that's 60 days, maybe it's 90, I don't know. And then I think the construction will take, on a new building, would take about 18 to 22 months. If we were doing this on flat property, we could do it in 14 months.
That's tearing it down.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'd be like 3 years from today.
Sorry.
If what? You add all of his things together, it's about 3 years from today before you would have the new building ready for
your critical issues then are the earthquake issue being one.
Right.
Whether the district is in or not and how they are in.
Yeah.
And then the third is financing.
Yeah, I mean, there's another part of it that financing, and we haven't, the idea is that
we can't really do that.
That we would.
No, I'm just talking about the critical points that you're facing. There's probably at least those three.
And
we're in control of only two of those. Because we'll have the geotech issues resolved by our next meeting. I think we should have the report.
Right.
But we don't know what the other district's timing is on their response to plans and cutting back their space in the building. And we can do the financing relatively quickly, I think, once we figure out what the scope of the project is.
Just on that account, have you talked to them about cutting back on their side of things?
We've talked about that. Yeah, I mean, we had meetings and about that, and the architects actually did a spatial program for them as well as for us, and so we sort of, without permission from them, we took some things out of their space that we, you know, I mean, you have to, how do you get, you have to, everybody has to give it, you know, everybody has to give 10, 15 or 20%. So we did that, and we know for a fact that they're not really interested in having holding cells. And at this point, I mean, the problem is with a small department, then what do you do with someone that you want to take to county jail? And, you know, if you don't have a holding cell. So that's the problem. We did a fire.
We've dealt with that for the last 75 years.
Yeah.
Well, so but it's not a new problem.
But they're not meeting the law either.
Yeah.
Well, okay. It's not a new problem, but it's a problem they have to solve. Yeah.
So we did a fire station in the valley, a little town all by itself. And so they were in Fresno. Let's say they're in Fresno County. And anyway, you know, 80 miles away, so they had a lot of holding cells, and they would just load up the cells until they had a van full, and they would then go off to jail because they didn't have enough. They couldn't, you know, they're about the same size as they are here, and so they couldn't have, you know, they couldn't have cops gone for a day, you know.
Are you planning on having another public meeting when to go over the new?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we want to do a new building because the other building is obsolete. We spend too much money on it. That would never end. We're breaking laws in terms of providing the right kind of spaces and separation for place. Brenda's upstairs. We don't have an elevator. We should really have her office ought to be accessible. It's not, and we've been. I won't forget you.
You've ignored me up to now. I decided.
Well.
This is really a good place, except when you want attention, because
well,
hang on. Shuts up.
Yeah. Now I've lost my thought. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I'm clearly Rabita on the outsourcing thing. But even if you ignore this, I'm interested in the financial issues. Okay, let's assume that we will continue to have our own officers. The police parks does not have the money to take care of their share.
No. It's unsolved.
Pardon me?
It's unsolved.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, does the fire department have the money that it takes for their part? Not quite.
Well, we don't have a commitment from someone. Okay. So, but we did some, Brenda did talking to, I think it was Wells Fargo, and they came up with some kind of limits, and it looked like within what they would loan and what we would pay back on an annual basis, basically a mortgage, that we could afford probably to pay for their share, and they would pay us back as a lease. So they would have to have that money that they could pay off. Over. So that's the game plan.
But in my professional life, I've done rebuilt. So you know it's either this or this or that. So there are sort of two or three different options. And on the police side, I mean, there clearly isn't that money. Even so, the finance committee has set some money aside because we may be without a place for a certain period
okay.
of time.
The intent is if it all worked out, we would be able to finance all of it, and then they would pay back their share over time.
Does the police park have the right to do this? Or do they need to go to the voters?
Well, we don't have to go to the voters to build
okay.
the building, so I don't
I
know
understand.
That they would have to, they would, I would
but
guess they can sign a lease.
You have a owner or co-tenant of the building who probably does have to go to the voters. So it seems to me that the financial is I don't understand it. It's way out there. It's not that
We don't have an answer because we have too many loose ends. So, but that's we kind of know what we know what we'd like to have it work. We know that we would have to finance some of their side and recoup it over time. We have Janice has I think found someone or maybe Brenda did a vendor that's with the California
special
district. I mean it's someone that. They get jobs through them or something of that sort, and so we would need then to look and see if our idea of how much we can afford to put down and pay in annual payments, you know, whether they agree with that, and then they would help find a funding source, and I think they would look probably for a private bond sort of arrangement.
I mean, I can tell you that Police Parks has not brought it to the Finance Committee. We have not looked at that. And I mean, financial issues.
Well, but they don't know what they're doing going to do either. So, I mean, we're sort of at this point where we're waiting for some things.
There are only that many possibilities.
That's right.
And you have to prepare for whatever the possibilities are.
Yeah.
So you talk about them so you begin to understand them. Am I paranoid about this?
But we're all paranoid about this. I mean, come on. It's a challenge.
Okay.
I have a simpler question. This two-page answer sheet that you prepared, has this been sent to the KPOA?
Yes.
At this point?
Yes.
Could I suggest that we also put it on our website then?
I think we talked about it because it's public. So yeah.
In fact, I would suggest that it's... that everything that we've passed out so far having to do with the fire, we could have a little firehouse corner in the website or a page on the website that has the various materials that we've, like, didn't we have materials at the June 24th meeting?
On the website. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's on the website?
Yeah.
Okay. But I think this definitely should be on the website.
Yeah.
Just a quick comment on the question of, doesn't require a response, of whether or not the police district contracts out may not make much difference at all to the footprint of what they'll need, because they're still going to have a presence there, a station, they're going to have places for holding ammunition and seized materials and things like that. And
records.
Maybe it doesn't make that much difference.
Well, I mean, we've got
in terms of office space, administrative space.
Yeah, I mean, that's really all. Right. But you know, but administrative space could be sourced out somewhere else too. I mean, for HR and stuff.
I guess that's the point. While it's important to have the fire station in the middle of the town, okay, so that it has a response. It doesn't really matter where the police facility is.
Yes, well, it does.
No, it really doesn't. Because your patrol are out on patrol.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So their response time is determined by where they are.
But it's also people coming there.
It's all we'd be talking about is how long it takes you to drive to see the secretary to file a...
The response time for the police.
They aren't in the police station. They're patrolling. We've only got one cop on.
Pardon me, please. Why is it that our response time of our fire department, since the contracting out, has increased too?
It didn't.
Yes, it has. You look at your own statistics.
In the last 20 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
You look at your own statistics. And we have the fire trucks right there, supposedly.
Yeah.
But the response time has gone up.
I don't.
You want to try this answer or not?
I don't know that I can speak to that. I mean, if the claim is the response time has went up since contracting started in 1995, I'd be a fool to try to guess on that number right this moment. It's been over 20 years.
You can go back and take a look, and we can discuss that again when we've had a chance to review those numbers.
Well, to begin with, you know, I think you're way ahead of yourself as far as what contracting would mean, because there are different models. Contract with the sheriff, you're going to have the same type of situation you have now. You're going to have a chief, you're going to have officers. That's the way the sheriff contracts, unless you want to have one officer 8 hours a day and then forget it. And so otherwise you may have, like El Cerrito talked about, having a beat extend into Kensington, which would be one officer who would patrol this area. So there are different models, and you're way ahead of yourself now.
In all honesty, I rarely chime in on this topic because I don't have a position, but this board is not going to decide what the CSD does with law.
I was just about to say that.
And so we're having a big topic of discussion about what contracting
looks
like.
We have no control
like.
Over that.
The only undecider with this board right here is, what does the CSD want in expectations of a building moving forward? I believe the CSD is at the infancy level of even deciding what they're going to do. And so we will have some open period of time where we don't know. But the fire board isn't going to make that decision.
No, absolutely not.
No, I would agree with you, and that's exactly my point.
Yeah, so.
They will tell us, and it's going to take time. And like, you know, whether it's 3 months or 6 months, I don't know that we know that, but then we're not predicting.
They haven't given us a schedule, right?
No.
What did you call it? You called it open? You know, it really is. We, at some point, we're stopping. We're moving ahead on some things, but we're going to wait.
Well,
are you moving ahead with the assumption that you're going to do something where you are? So no other options are being...
We make no decisions until we get the geotech report.
Okay, so the geotech...
And then we'll start making decisions from there.
You have many steps to go through.
Yes, yeah,
well,
okay,
if,
yeah. We thought, I think, at least the committee and I hope the board, the rest of the board, is that being right next to the library in some, a little corner of the park taking up an acre or so would be a really good place. It's a little more central. You're still coming out on the Arlington, just like, you know, it's the main artery we have. It's not a divided street, so there's less problems with that. And so, but we got really hammered by some kind of threatening things that we didn't want to deal with. So so we pulled out. I haven't given up, but and so that's sort of where we stand. But I think we have to wait and see what, you know, where we are. Okay. That I think. But let me go back to the agenda because I think that's what we're going to talk. That's public safety for tonight. And the next education, Janice?
Yeah, there are a bunch of dates you can put on your calendar. The Solana Stroll is September 10th, which is this Sunday, and we'll have our engine in the Solana Stroll again. Tri-City Safety Day is 2 weeks later on the Saturday down at El Cerrito Plaza. They're planning a really, it's a great event all the time. You're never quite sure what they're going to do. I think this time they're also planning on having a Secret Service there, is what Dave told me, which is going to be pretty cool. I don't think they've had the Secret Service there. Those guys in suits with little ears and band peculiar things on their lapels, yeah. But I don't think they've been there before. You know, it's kind of depends on what's happening in the area. That we know who's been invited, and you never quite know who's going to show up until shortly before the event. But anyway, that's always a really nice event. So I encourage you to go, and you don't have to go for the whole time. They do really, you know, like it's amazing to see them take apart a car, you know, with the jaws of life. It's kind of a breathtaking thing when they do that. But they've got animal rescue people there, canine demonstrations. It's really a wonderful event, so it's worth dropping in on. The Fire Prevention Week open house is on October 14th. And are we having that at each of our stations or just in Kensington?
Station 65 and Station 72.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just the two. Okay.
The central station. Yeah.
Great.
What's the date on that?
So it's our station and then the one out by the country club. The one further out by the Arlington will have an open house then. And then we've got the California Shakeout on October 19th. And what do we bring out our little earthquake table for that?
No, on that we're going to, Chief James, our newly promoted training chief and CERT coordinator, is putting together some outreach to all of our CERT area folks.
Yes.
Oh, great.
And we're going to work with Ricky Hall and his department on getting contact out to all the Neighborhood Watch folks.
Oh, great.
So everyone can participate on the on the great shakeout. And we're going to put together some stuff and website links so people can check their emergency supplies, prepare, you know, check their house out, make sure pictures are mounted right and cabinets, those kind of things. So Kevin's working on a bunch of things in that arena.
Well, that's great. And then it's going to be by CERT neighborhood group then, rather than at the fire station.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay,
correct.
Great.
And,
okay.
And Sylvia Pasai is the board representative for the police district. And
that's working on that, great.
And I'm the board rep for us.
Good. Great. So. Okay, good. Thanks, Larry.
And Janice, you missed one date. On September 16th, a week before Tri-Safety Day, is the Centennial Parade in El Cerrito.
Oh, yeah, that Lando was talking about.
And that ends up in the park, and there will be, I know Kensington will be in the park, where I will be at the CERT booth, for example.
Great.
And I think Kensington 65 will be there. And,
I think they're going to try to make it after the parade. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brenda, is it 1,000 sandwiches?
Yeah.
First 1,000 folks get a free sandwich.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're expecting more than 1,000? You never know.
Oh, yeah.
So if I may, a couple things I'd like to add on, just to what you had. The Solano Stroll, I spoke with some of the coordinators out of the city of Albany. They're expecting over 100,000 people this year.
Wow. Yes.
So if you're going to go early.
Yeah.
100,000 people on Solano.
Yeah,
that's your warning or your greeting. Take it as you will.
Can you imagine how many porta potties they had to put aside?
We no longer get to throw candy from the fire engine. They don't like that anymore.
And
we have to walk and hand it out.
On Tri-City Safety Day, we're trying to invite more friends and folks, so we're going to see if the Milo Foundation will come out for dog adoption.
Oh, that's right. Dave said that, yeah.
And so we hope. We want to bring something different to it, so for people to see.
That's a good idea.
We'll keep the police dog over there and the adoption dogs over there.
Great.
So we'll get creative with that. So
they'll have their Houston dogs. You know, they brought out about 70 of them, I think, Monday.
Yeah.
And do we have a date for shredding yet?
October 21st.
I'm sorry.
Do you have October 21st?
October 21st.
October 21st.
So can we see all these all these dates on the website?
That'll be your fire plug in probably 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay.
Every date will be
and more. The drug more things drop off be the same day.
Yeah.
The 28th.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
And we'll post that on Nextdoor so everybody knows. And have we reserved the little signboard?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Moving on to Contra Costa County.
I left CSD. A little report with each board member, and there's a couple more here. It was a very long meeting, almost filled 2 pages worth of my brief report.
Cool.
Not a brief report anymore. But I'll just go through the very high points. The first was that there was both I and Nina went to the meeting, so she can correct me if I miss something or say something wrong. There was a very good presentation by Jeff Land of the CSDA Finance Corporation, and CSDA is the California Special Districts Association. It's every special district in the state. I think there's 800 of them or so.
Oh, no,
something like that.
3,000.
Is represented on this, and their finance arm actually provides financial assistance to the provides finances to the special district so that they can build buildings like firehouses. Mm-hmm. And
we're looking at a fair amount of money. I thought they had a pretty low limit.
No.
Did they talk about that?
I think Janice actually talked to them. Talk with her about that.
So anyway, I thought I had distributed the PowerPoint slides to everybody on here. I'd given them to Brenda to distribute, but I'll do it again if there's any doubt. The other thing that's very important that came from our LASCO representative, Mike McGill, and that is that there's a lot of attention being given by, in Sacramento, being given to special districts in the sense of holding them under a microscope, making sure that all the special districts adhere to following regulations. And Mike's advice to all districts was that this is a good time to make sure we follow all of the regulations and that we do everything that we're supposed to do.
I think he's probably talking about the Little Hoover report, Little Hoover Commission report.
That's one, yeah. That's probably the big one, but there's several different legislative investigative bodies that are looking into special
districts. Yeah, but they just came out with that report a month ago, I think.
So this is a good time. I mean, I think we're very clean. We've got the transparency and the distinction award, so I don't see any problem, but this is certainly a good time to not have a problem because there are some districts that are in trouble. And I guess the final thing for those interested, the October meeting is going to focus on East County Fire District and the problems they've been having. I'm sure you've read it in the paper. They're having they had to close many fire stations. And this was even said before this latest thing came up where they all of a sudden found some money. But they've had serious financial problems out in East County, and they're going to talk about what the problems were, what caused the problems, and how to prevent the problems from occurring in the future. And I think it'll be a very worthwhile meeting to go to for people in fire districts, because we're always worried about that. And that's my report. Okay,
thank you. Diablo Fire Safe Council, anything to talk about there?
Not really. I guess it's the end of the grant year. We're going to be starting on a new round of grants in the next couple of months. And the big question mark now, as with all federal agencies, is we don't know if there's going to be federal grants for this. If there's not any money available for the Diablo Fire Safe Council to get grants from, then all of a sudden we don't have much of a mission in terms of doling out money. So everything is pretty much in limbo as to whether these FEMA grants are going to come through. It's pretty clear that PG&E has been been donating money on a regular basis and will continue to do that, and they've been very cooperative. They usually have a representative at our meetings and the town. So this may be yet another example of whether the federal government money won't be available, so the citizens will have to come up with it instead. We'll see. It's very uncertain at this point what the funding situation is.
It's really upsetting, every way you look.
It's extremely upsetting.
Yeah. Okay, but and...
We can't solve that problem in this meeting.
No, we can't. policy manual, you and...
Don, if I may, one thing on Diablo Fire Safe. I'm sure you guys are all aware that we're meeting early this month, and we were able to do that because we had 100% compliance of our weed abatement program this year. So that was all voluntary. We didn't have to do any forceful abatement.
Good.
One property that we were concerned might head that way was able to apply with some of the neighbors for a Diablo Fire Safe grant and was successful. So it really did help make us close the year out without an abatement and a lien on a property. So that's always
beautiful.
Good for you. I hope you'll congratulate Joe Gagne, our fire prevention officer. He did a great job to get that 100% voluntary compliance. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay, office manual.
Policy manual. How are we doing?
We don't have a report.
Joe, did we finish that yet?
Yeah.
Sure, weren't you there?
it's on our list, yeah.
It's on our list.
Right.
It'll take a while.
Okay. August is a pretty bad time to try to start a project. September, I think we'll do better.
Okay. Correspondence. There's something I don't quite understand, Lance. Fire prevention fees. What is that?
Yeah.
A big issue, but I wouldn't quite.
About 5 or 6 years ago, Cal Fire implemented a SRA fee. It's for residents that they mapped out that were in the state responsibility area. They went through and they used maps to determine what was local LRA response, which was mutual threat zone, meaning our responsibility and the state's responsibility. And these maps were put in place just to pretty much set jurisdiction. They were put in place many years ago. Well, about 5 years ago, they used those maps to set up a fee. And there, I believe it was 8 homes in Kensington off Cannon that dropped down in there that were included in the SRA area. And so they were given a fee every year by Cal Fire. I think the most recent was hovering around $190. So there was an appeal process. If you wanted to appeal, citizens had to appeal on their own. I wrote many letters and had correspondence with chiefs and chief level folks at Cal Fire to try to get our folks out. Every time we put an appeal, it would get denied and they would get left in. So there's the appeal process, I think, is the appeal to get an area of property out of it is every 7 years. And so we were only 2 years in the last appeal process. But with the trade, cap and trade change that just took place, there was a little movement of funding at the state level, and they figured out a way to fund CAL FIRE's needs for this SRA fee. So they shifted that to pay for those services CAL FIRE is doing and discontinued the SRA fee. So our citizens won't be charged that fee.
So the homeowners don't have to pay anymore. The state is undertaking that.
Correct.
So this is basically good news. Huh?
Yeah,
yes, it is good news.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There are some, there are three letters that came after the last meeting we had that were in favor of a low dollar a year contract for the maintenance stuff, but we're done by that. And then there is a
letters.
Yeah,
and then
there's a nice little card with a child thanking us for a call, I'm guessing, Lance. And I think with that, we're done. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Yeah. Have a great trip.
Yes, I'm looking
forward to it.